Why Bugsy Siegel was a friend of mine. In 1947, Nick Hauser and I had only two loves in this world, baseball and Cheerio Yo-Yo contests. That's how we met Benny, one spring night after a doubleheader out at Buffalo Stadium on the Galveston Freeway. His brand new Ford convertible, a gleaming maroon job with a starch white top, white wall tires, and blue dot taillights, was stuck in a sodden field behind the bleachers. Benny was trying to lift the bumper while his girlfriend floored the accelerator, spinning the tires and blowing streams of muddy water and torn grass back in his face. He wore a checkered sport coat, lavender shirt, hand-painted necktie, and two-toned shoes, all of it now whipsawed with mud. But it was his eyes, not his clothes, that you remembered. They were a radiant blue and literally sparkled. "You punks want to earn $2 each," he said. "Who you calling a punk?" Nick said. Before Benny could answer, his girlfriend shifted into reverse, caught traction, and backed over his foot. He hopped up and down, holding one shin, trying to bite down on his pain, his eyes lifted heavenward, his lips moving silently. "Get in the fucking car before it sinks into this slop again," his girlfriend yelled. He limped to the passenger side. A moment later, they fishtailed across the grass past us. Her hair was long, blowing out the window, the pinkish red of a flamingo. She thumbed a hot cigarette into the darkness. "Boy, did you check out that babe's bongos? Wow," Nick said. But our evening encounter with Benny and his girlfriend was not over. We were on the shoulder of the freeway, trying to hitch a ride downtown, flicking our Cheerios under a street lamp, doing a whole range of upper-level yo-yo tricks. Round the world, shoot the moon, rock the cradle and the atomic bomb. When the maroon convertible roared past us, blowing dust and newspaper in our faces. Suddenly, the convertible cut across two lanes of traffic, made a U-turn, then a second U-turn, horns blowing all over the freeway, and braked to a stop abreast of us. "You know who I am?" Benny said. "No," I replied. "My name is Benjamin Siegel." "You're a gangster," Nick said. "He's got you, Benny," the woman behind the wheel said. "How do you know that?" Benny said. "We heard your name on Gangbusters. Nick and me listen every Sunday night," I said. "Can you do the Chinese star?" he asked. "We do Chinese stars in our sleep," Nick said. "Get in," Benny said, pulling back the leather seat. "We got to go home," I said. "We'll take you there. Get in," he said. We drove out South Main, past Rice University and park-like vistas dense with live oak trees, some of them hung with Spanish moss. In the south, heat lightning flickered over the Gulf of Mexico. Benny bought us fried chicken and ice cream at Bill Williams Drive-In, and while we ate, his girlfriend smoked cigarettes behind the wheel and listened to the radio, her thoughts known only to herself. Her face so soft and lovely in the dash light, I felt something drop inside me when I stole a look at it. Benny popped open the glove box and removed the top of the line chartreuse Cheerio Yo-Yo. Behind the yo-yo, I could see the steel surfaces of a semi-automatic pistol. "Now show me the Chinese star," he said. He stood with us in the middle of the drive-in parking lot, watching Nick and me demonstrate the intricate patterns of the most difficult of all of the Cheerio competition tricks. Then he tried it himself. His yo-yo tilted sideways, its inner surfaces brushing against the string, then twisted on itself and went dead. "The key's candle wax," I said.
"Candle wax?" he said.
"Yeah, you wrap the string around a candle and saw it back and forth. That gives you the spin and the time you need to make the pattern for the star," I said.
"I never thought of that," he said.
"It's a breeze," Nick said. "Benny, give it a rest," his girlfriend said from inside the car. 15 minutes later, we dropped off Nick at his house on the dead-end street where I used to be his neighbor. It was a wonderful street, one of trees and flowers and old brick homes, and a horse pasture dotted with live oaks beyond the canebrake that enclosed the cul-de-sac. But when my father died, my mother and I were evicted, and we moved across Westheimer and took up residence in a neighborhood where every sunrise broke on the horizon like a testimony to personal failure. Benny's girlfriend pulled to a stop in front of my house. Benny looked at the broken porch and the orange rust on the screens. "This is where you live?" he asked. "Yeah," I said, my eyes leaving his. He nodded. "You need to study hard. Make something of yourself. Go out to California, maybe. It's the place to be," he said.